right, everyone. We're back here at the Beach Court Podcast. Max is flexing some cards that he pulled. He's always pulling some heat out of his packs every single time, no matter what. Hope you guys had a great time down in New Orleans this weekend. We got a packed episode this week. We'll look at the weekend's recap, talk about Parker and Max's tournament run down in New Orleans, talk about the NAIC results with Isaiah Bradner taking it down once again with Gardevoir. No one can stop it. I think it's only like lost two tournaments in the last 20. Something pretty crazy, a stat like that. Or review our fantasy draft results where one person did a little bit better than everyone else. And then we'll also look at our tier list and give you an update on what our meta predictions were and how close they were, surprisingly. We'll talk about the top 125. I know a lot of you are here because you saw a bunch of my tweets this weekend. Looking for more updates. So we'll talk about top 125. Pokemon Ambassadors were announced this week. Got some awesome members of the community that are going to be ambassadors. So happy to see that. We'll talk about that. We've got trivia. As always, got to stump the boys, even though they had a weekend down in New Orleans. And then we'll wrap it up with Crispin's Corner to find out who's been cooking down in New Orleans. Boys, how's your travels? You guys home safe? How you feeling?
Pretty good, actually. Those beds were some of the most comfortable beds I've ever slept on in my life. I genuinely think I got the best sleep I've gotten in months while I was there.
I mean, that's good. That's what you need for a good tournament run.
Yeah. That did not happen.
I mean, you were 3-0.
I was 3-0.
You were 3-0.
Yep.
Like, I was watching and I'm like, yo, bro's cooking. We got the Grimmsnarl. We're going crazy. We'll get into that in a minute. Maddox, how was your weekend?
Our weekend was fantastic. Again, it's just so great to be like at international championships with so many people. It's so great to meet so many people, fans of the pod, you know, folks, you know, meet, put like Discord faces in real life, Twitter faces in real life. Always good to see folks either at the venue or down in the French Quarter. So always a good time. Had a great time playing some Goldengo Dragapult. I didn't do as well, but you know, it's fine because we were there mainly there for a good time and then just, you know, enjoy the trip before the World Championships.
Did you splash around New Orleans with Epic Splash?
I did play a little bit of Epic Splash on a Saturday.
Hey?
Did some cubing with Xander. Xander hosted like the Super Cube where like four of their friends all had the same cube all showed up and we just had a massive tournament all with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so super cool. But we had a little bit of time before that, so broke out the Epic Splash decks, had some fun, made sure the locals played some with Omni Joe from Omnipoke.
Nice.
So he got to... He begrudgingly played some Epic Splash. He's much more a fan of the skill-based formats. And
oh, does
Epic
he not
Splash
like Epic Splash?
I think like one too many coin flips for him.
All right, fair. Yeah, my weekend was pretty good. I was at home, you know, co-streaming and tracking the top 125, like giving people's updates after like round six or seven. It was a really interesting race to watch, man. There was some really cool storylines coming down the stretch that we'll jump into a little bit later. Had a lot of fun restreaming. People jumped in, you know, were chatting and watching the tournament. My wife made me some homemade beignets on Sunday.
I wasn't
streaming on Sunday, but she made me homemade beignets. She's like, what do you want for Father's Day? I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not in New Orleans. I would love some beignets. So like, she went like out of her way on Amazon to like order the, you know, the French place is.
Café du Monde
beignet mix.
It hurts my soul you're calling Café du Monde that French place.
That
but
French
I'll roast
place.
You for that later.
Anyway, so
that's like being like, oh yeah, I like the orange guy. What do you mean? The little fire dude that evolves into Charizard.
Like, listen, I have a baby brain right now, okay? So I get a pass on that one.
The baby, it does not have a fully matured brain, but you do. So
yeah, I get a pass on that one. Anyways, Parker, just give us a quick, you know, 4 sentence highlight. What you played this weekend, how it went, would you change anything, how you felt coming in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I played Grimmsnarl, the new deck, the new hotness on the block. I don't know. I mean, like every deck, I feel like almost has a 50-50 across the board. Like that's kind of the format we're in. It just depends how you draw and this and that. I will say, like, I'm comfortable in the Guardi matchup, and then, like, Goldengo is, like, a super good matchup for me, I think. I think that, well, my round 7 opponent I guess realized it wasn't a good matchup. He's like, "Oh, I've already beat two of these. Yeah, it's easy." And you just play Badu Monkey Dory and Devo their field, and they just lose every single time. But yeah, started off 3-0. Round two was at table one. I thought I was gonna be on stream. I was like jumping up and down, and then they were like, "Oh, you're at the, I don't know what to call it. Like it was like
Well, they
I
had a
guess there
side
was,
stream for
yeah,
like the
there
first
were."
time ever at any event I'd really see. They had like four separate areas where they're filming individual games.
And I guess like there were like spectators, like it was in the spectator row and stuff like that.
So they've
And
done
I
it
guess
for VGC for a while now. The last two NAICs they've done this, but this is the first time I've ever seen it done at NAICs where they like will have a camera on a table and it streams directly to a TV. I won't jump into this too much and I'll give back your time in a second. But really, really unfortunate that they did not stream those matches or at least record them to be streamed later. Because there was definitely a round, I think it was like round four or round five, that ended in like 4 minutes. Like I think it was John Eng's round actually, where it like went brick brick.
Yeah, I think it was like 9 minutes
It
or
went brick
something.
brick, and then like we just had an hour of dead content. Like they were just, Skarzek's and they're doing his tier list and this and that. And I'm like, can you just go show us some like side action, like
Yeah,
tables?
they like literally had like the camera, like he didn't have the headsets, but like the camera and like the lighting, and it was like all roped off and
That's
stuff, and
fine.
I
If
was
they
like,
do it next year, I'll just go hand cam it like I did Merida and just
yeah,
it'll be
exactly.
fine.
True.
Anyways,
True.
continue your updates round, round four, whatever happened, happened.
Yeah, so I mean, I was excited. I 2-0'd my the mirror there. Played like super well, I think. Round three hit another mirror, 2-0'd them. Even though both games he just got like so far ahead, and I like crawled back. Round four hit Christian Fontenot, and had an unfortunate game three where he was like, I had lost game two, and he was going first, but he was like looking at his hand, so I was like, oh, I must be going first. Like literally, just no thoughts in my brain. So I just picked up the top card. He's like, oh, I'm going first. I was like, oh, okay. So I had a DPL, a double bricks against Flareon, and then I hit Yon Mega round six, which I almost won
Cooked.
game two. I was a turn away, but he was like his third boss to bring up a Monkey Dory, and I only like I didn't have the energy or way to retreat it. So he got out of the corner, and he was like, after the game, he's like, oh yeah, you would have won in one more corner. And I was like, yeah, I know. But yeah, then I hit Pango round seven. I won. Hit Bolt round eight, where he was like, oh yeah, I've been waiting to hit one of these. And then
Oh no.
I went to Badu Monkey Dory, and he was like, you know what, I just don't want to play this matchup anymore. So because of that, I was like, okay. And then round nine had an unfortunate, honestly, triple brick, but I managed to win game one. Yeah,
Hey, good job
unfortunate.
coming back. Good performance, 6-3, right? Or five, or five, sorry,
Five
five, two,
four,
one,
five
five,
four.
four. All right, 5-4. Hey, still good performance. Still good run. One time you lose some. Max, how about you? What'd you play and how'd your run go?
Yeah, I decided to lock in the Goldango Dragapult. Again, it was about like a little bit over a week before the tournament, and I was like, hey, here's a deck that I know well. Let me continue with this. I wanted to refine the list. I knew that Cypher's Maniac's Codebreaking was going to be a little bit more important. The list I played previously was a heavy Dragapult build with no Cypher, but with extra Badoo running around, especially Marnie's Grimmsnarl, I wanted to make it a little more resilient. So I was pretty proud of the list that I made, a little bit of a hybrid of the list, like that Lee Boy has been tearing it up with, and the list that I played to Milwaukee. So I felt pretty good about the list. However, like what was definitely lacking is just like the number of games I had just in general in the new format. So I think I felt a little bit of that, just felt a little bit rusty throughout. Started 2-0-1, so felt good there, and then hit John Bligic. I'm going to butcher his name, but solid player who's been on stream and a couple top finishes early this year. So had a good set against them. Eventually lost a close one in game three, but and conceded in gentlemen's. And then towards the end, and then just kind of my luck kind of petered out. I hit a mirror, and I never had the pieces I needed. I prized Z-Search Pro twice, kind of missed a few steps there. And then my round six ended. I played against the Marty's Grimmsnarl. Won game one, lost a close game two, and in game three, I got, you know, my turn two was just attach minor Aaron running, and then got KO'd by Morgrim's attack, which hits Kimmy goal for weakness. So, unfortunate way to end the run there. So, I ended 2-3-1. I'm already locked for Worlds, so I didn't really need to stick around or play two more. And also, I'd been kind of had a little bit of a headache, hadn't been feeling that well the rest of the day, so I decided to just drop. You know, kind of thought about playing it out and just, you know, going for 5-3-1, but ultimately decided to drop, go back home and rest. And then, fortunately, felt a little better, so I was able to enjoy the weekend. So, again, not super proud of the run. I think the list was pretty good. I got a little bit unlucky, but also I feel I didn't play near enough games to actually be ready and prepared for a deep enough run. So something that I'm definitely, you know, keeping in mind going into Worlds, we're saying, hey, you know, these people are going to be showing up with plenty of practice, and I need to have that as well. So
yeah,
that's a.
You also got to figure out like a routine for you to be healthy in a tournament.
Yeah, that's also what I'm working on. You know, I'll figure out my full season plans later. But the main focus for Maddox these next 2 months. Is one, figuring out what I'm playing to Worlds and getting good at that. But the other part of that is just tackling the health, because I feel like I keep showing up at events. If I show
up
at Anaheim,
do vitamin C's leading up to?
I got my multivitamin gummies right here at my desk.
Well, you should start taking they have those emergency packets.
Well, I know what emergency is. I had some before the trip.
Did you? Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, you're
so.
Right.
I'm working on it.
I guess you gotta
drop your health tips down below in the comments. I also wore a mask on the plane, so it didn't help. Drop your health tips for Maddox down below in the comments. Or reach out to me on Twitter, because this has got to stop.
Yeah, it does got to stop. I mean, you've been sick at a lot of events, and it's unfortunate. It's hard
to
play
at or after.
Sick.
Yeah.
I still remember that day, like me and you hit round two. Like, you know, day one or round one of day two.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you were just feeling so terrible, and like, I was like, man,
I
felt bad for you.
Ago,
I felt so bad for you.
Bro, felt bad because I was sick and because he was playing Spirit 2.
Yeah, because I was playing Spirit 2. Anyway, so let's jump into the weekend's results. First off, we got to go into our predictions and our fantasy drafts. So I'm going to show our fantasy draft results for those of you that are listening on podcasting platforms. Make sure you click on the video on YouTube or Spotify if you're on Spotify. But right now I'm sharing the podcast draft results, and I had two people not get points. Maddox had three not get points. Parker had three not get points.
Oh, what happened to this BFL of five? Come on, you're just stacking your numbers at this point.
Oh, you're right. I didn't do that. We can do BFL. You want to do BFL?
Wow.
Just do a quick max function or max
five.
We can do
BFL.
Actually, we can't. We have to do. It'd be too much Excel.
Okay,
I'll do a master class on Excel later for
okay, okay. Anyways, we can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
15, 55.
Okay. And then over here.
That already
you
beats
got
our scores.
1, 2, 3.
And this is still awful. For anyone who hasn't clicked over to YouTube yet to see it, Eric drafted Tord and Isaiah Bradner. As well as, actually, wait, John ain't got more points than did he? Or no, even top 16 for ICs are low. But anyways, Eric drafted Tord and Isaiah Bradner, but who both finished in the top four. I drafted no one who finished in the top four. Parker did draft Piper, who did finish in the top eight. But between that, it was a pretty clear, clean sweep for Eric.
Yeah. I like Parker said, I scored more points with my best five than y'all did with your old teams.
Well, now, your best five is Bradner and Tor.
I mean, shout out Maddox. You got the deck right.
Yeah, they get Gardevoir. That's what people really care about.
You got the bonus 50 for deck right. Mm-hmm. I was the only one to get the bonus points for the the world qualification.
Yeah, shout out to
Sanjay. Unofficially, but.
Shout out to Sanjay. Clutched up. They got to, I think, 720 after, which looks like
something
should
like
be
that.
Good.
Barely.
Sanjay said on Twitter that he only performed that well because I drafted him.
There we
so,
go.
That.
I mean,
everyone else
get
is
it.
Upset you didn't draft them, Eric. So.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, I mean, I've had some baller players like Fabrizio. Like, what is my worst finish like in my top five? So 1, 2, 3, 4. My worst finish was top 32.
That's pretty good.
Anyways, so that's our fantasy draft results. Better luck next time, boys.
But Gardevoir still kicking.
Yeah, I had
Gardevoir as the winning deck. I just didn't draft the right Gardevoir players.
You just didn't draft the right Gardevoir players. Speaking
but it
of,
wasn't Henry Chow, but it was Henry Chow's deck, so I think that should count for something.
That should count for something, yeah. That's
15 more points.
I'll give you 500 points.
Maybe I'm almost over 1,000 points now, but... Anyways, let's talk about some other folks who are well over 1,000 championship points.
Yeah, so speaking of Gardevoir, Gardevoir ruined the top four. We got the top four, and it was Tord versus Gardevoir. Tord on straight Dragapult versus three Gardevoir players. And the storyline was, how does Tord win this? Like, how does he make it through? You know, Gardevoir is a tough matchup for Dragapult. And Max, you said you saw all of top four? I know we talked about this before. Did you see all of it? Or just okay? And Parker, you haven't seen any of this, but you've probably seen the highlight.
I saw the highlight.
Riley McKay made the single best play I have ever seen on my entire planet. So the situation was that they were going to overtime, and Riley was technically ahead in the prize race, but he had no Gardevoir. So if he benched another Ralts, he would have lost with the Hawlucha combo. So he could not bench Ralts. And so therefore, because he could not bench Ralts, because that's a lose con for Riley, Riley could not also attack, because if Riley attacked, he also lost because he would not have had a backup attacker for the following turn. So because of those two situations, Riley found a line that almost no one on this planet would probably find with the pass on turn three of time or turn two. On turn two of time, his last turn found the pass. And that is just like, I would have thought I would never hear that sentence ever in a world, right? Where someone says, pass and they win the game. And so because he found pass, he did pass because there was two bosses discarded at the time. He had just disrupted Torrid's hand. He didn't want to activate Fezzendipity because his lose con at that point was just boss.
A couple different lose cons if a knockout is taken there as well, right? So this came up particularly because of the time rules. And then if the game were to continue for an infinite amount of turns, Riley does need to take a knockout eventually, given this board state.
Yeah.
But in this particular situation, the difference was that Riley was at three prizes, Tord was at three prizes. You know, Riley can go and use Lily Scefairi to go and knock out the Dragapult. However, if that happens, then Riley now loses to several conditions, including, you know, setting up another Dragapult. Most importantly, just losing to a bear attacking the active for one with one energy. Actually, sorry, with zero energy. So I think that being the biggest risk, and of course activating Fezzendipity, adding additional lines, things like that. So again, I think in this situation, finding that play when, you know, again, you're having to play playing the clock is a different game than playing the TCG in itself. Yeah. And in this situation, right, that was the line we're saying, hey, actually, in a real game, I need to attack and just hope my opponent misses. But because of this, I have the initiative and I can pass. And make it very difficult for my opponent to win. Tord have been Iona to three. Again, the only outs at that point were boss or Jamming Tower. If Riley does take the knockout on the Dragapult, then Tord gains a number of win cons that become easier to hit because of, you know, the
It was so insane. I was on my edge of my seat when Tord hit the Iona to draw three and like or whatever it was and he needs to find the stadium. I was like, I just knew he was going to find it. I was like, I know he's going to find stadium here because it's just towards plot armor, but didn't
Riley
find it.
No. Riley defeated the script writers.
Riley defeated the script, and it was so much fun to watch it unfold. So congratulations, Isaiah Bradner and Riley, for making finals. Everyone else had a great tournament. Some other results here from the tournament, looking at the top 16 results here on Limitless Labs, because we do like the labs and get to see some more data. We had a 15-person top cut that ended up with 32 match points. I thought for a little bit it was going to be 33, but a few more ties happened where 32 was able to make it. Some standouts here. We had one Marnie's Grimstall with Piper Lapine. We had Cameron Chinoy on Zoroark, straight Zoroark, and he put on a good performance on stream too. A lot of Dragapult, a lot of Gardevoir, one Raging Bolt, but we won't talk about that deck. And then Flareon Noctowl with Nathan Ginsberg. What stands out to you guys?
Ray Chen back in top eight with Toadscruel.
True. I almost forgot. How could I forget Ray? I'm sorry. Ray Chen back in top cut. It was so interesting because I was tracking, and I'll talk about this a little bit more. I was talking about now. I was tracking top 125 pretty hard. So Ray, before Portland, probably thought they never had a chance to qualify for Worlds without an auto invite. And so Ray got top 8 in Portland. And as ASIM was starting to happen, I was like, oh, crap. They'll probably qualify with a top 8 finish. And then I saw that they got the number 1 seed, and so they got the bye to go straight in, because we thought there was going to be a 16-person cut. And it ended up not being. So I was surprised to see Ray get in the top 8 like that. So, but even furthermore, all those people that were like sitting at like 126, 127, bro, they were like rooting so hard for Ray to win that game, because Ray just took a spot from them by these two phenomenal performances, and it's like, please just win one more game and take an auto invite so people pass us, because like it was crazy. The storylines are crazy, but let's just get back to the results. What stood out to you about top 16 and the results here? Anything that you really didn't predict or didn't think was possible?
So to me, it's the Zoroark. I mean, Toadscroll is actually like kind of well positioned. Zoroark didn't like slip through my mind, I guess. I thought there'd just be too much bolt for it to like do good.
Yeah, and Shaman's a card now.
Yeah. But lots of Dragapult. Mm-hmm. Not terribly surprised at that, but I don't know. Pretty good looking cut.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron did innovate on the list a little bit, right? So instead of the standout, you know, 2-2 or 3-2 Darmanitan line, opting for only a 1-1 Darmanitan line and really leaning into the Reshiram, playing two copies of Reshiram. And I think really leaning into, like, the tank ability, right? Playing double Rigid Band, double Monkey Dory, double Turo scenario to pick up your, you know, damage Zoroark, and plus leaning the powerful Rage as the attack. I think really just trying to, like, lean on the consistency of trade and say, hey, I'm going to hit consistently. I have a bunch of powerful options, Black Belts Training, Rigid Band, Defiance Band, TM Devo, Blood Moon to close things down the late game. I think some cool innovations.
Yeah.
And again, but also, you know, just a strong player playing a strong deck they felt comfortable with, and things going well.
Is Devo standard, or is that, that's not standard, right?
Devo showed up in like the Luka Zing list, like right before rotation, like at Portland.
Okay.
That was like the most recent case for it.
Okay.
But like, you know, is it the most played card, but it has lately shown up. But Cameron Chinoy did also play the
Pretty
TM Evolution.
Pretty cool list. Cameron played it really well on stream. Every move they made was like very deliberate and like not slow, but like not fast. It was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the standout to me, again, we know a lot of Dragapult, right? So 7 total Dragapult decks of the 15. 3 of them being Dragapult Charizards in the top, in the asymmetrical cut. So, like, very cool to see that. Again, Ray Chen, shout out to them. Just a generational run right now. Only 1 Marnie's Grim Snarl. Only 1 Raging Bolt, even though that was a very high percentage of the room, you know, as was Marnie's Grim Snarl. Dragapult's performance is no surprise. Gardevoir performance is no surprise. Yeah, I think that's it. Unfortunately, Goldango did not quite do what we wanted to do. Highest place in Grand Shen at 44th place. And Grand Shen been enjoying the Dango Pulse for a while.
Yikes.
Actually playing the Team Rocket's Venture Bomb as the Pikachu out as well. And just a little extra way to put some damage into play.
It plays everywhere else too, right? Box. It's pretty good against Dragapult if you hit it, right?
Multiple areas.
It's like your Monkey Dory, right?
Yeah, it's your Monkey Dory, yeah.
That's pretty cool. We got a Ho-Ho Armor Rouge box at 56th place. This list is pretty cool. We have some friends that actually played against this list that lost to the Durant middle at the end.
I think they lost to the Durant attack.
Oh, attack. You're right.
The KO Charizard.
They were playing Charizard. So. You're right. I thought it was the mill part. I guess I forgot about
it. Hopefully it wasn't the mill part, but
it'd be kind of funny if it was.
But again, like the Ho-Ho box. Again, kind of a deck that's been, like, talked about, theorized some. Pokemari has, like, a Discord on it. But, you know, several people showed up and played it, and here it is, punching a ticket with the top 16.
Yeah.
Other top 16 lists got thrown on just a little bit more. Top 64. Okay. Other top 64 standout lists at 60th place, Fabian Poole with
Garchomp.
The Garchomp. Again, and Fabian also played this to the Masters Cup right before NAIC, so... Played, I don't know if it's the exact same list, but ended up playing Garchomp again to a top 64 finish And anyone who wants to play Garchomp, I'd recommend, hey, start with this list because it cooks and it was played by a very, very good player.
Yeah, this list is really good. I was kind of wondering, like, why do they play the Dark instead of, like, just... Oh, it's because of Crispin.
You want Crispin,
never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Answering my own question, when I'm looking at the list, we got Walls at 66.
I don't know about that one, back. Chief. With an Iron Leaves? Wait, hold up.
Iron Leaves, Mist Energy, Heroes K. We got Leftovers.
This list is wild. Shout out Nathan Bumbarger.
Let's go. All right. Got some Leftovers.
What is the Leaves here for?
Grimstar all, bro.
Grimstar, true.
Because they can just spread damage and Devo you. Yeah. You've got one Mist to protect that, but that's not a lot. Yeah, okay, so we got
very
that.
Very cool to see.
Anything else? Is this the highest placing Jolting Box?
Ryan, oh, say it ain't so, Jolting Box.
Oh,
I think
my
it is,
God.
Unfortunately.
Woo! 78th place, Ryan Tung. Highest placing Jolting Box. 2 Gravity Mountain, 1 Power Glass. People love their Power Glass, man. Card's good.
Oh, sorry, we got to jump back up a little bit. There's a list that we missed. I need you to go to 35th for Matthew Hubbard.
Oh, Matthew, sorry.
Matthew Hubbard, this is Ogre Pond box deck. This is like Lily's Clefairy-ish box.
We got Ogre's Mask.
But Ogre's Mask in the list. Matthew, again, all the way up to a top 54
cash
placement.
Wait, where's the fire
guy?
We need the fire guy.
Hearthflame Ogre Pond is the only one that is not good. So you just play everything else.
We need it for Goldengo.
No, you don't.
How was the list being Goldengo?
It beat the two that it played in Swiss. Actually, no, you have Cornerstone. It can't do anything against Cornerstone, yeah.
Okay.
And half of them cut Dragapult because reasons.
So we hit two straight Goldengos and just farmed it with. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Best shout out to Matthew.
Well, like,
again,
this doesn't
really
beat
cool.
Goldengo Dragapult, right? There's no way.
If he can ever sub Dragapult, it's fine, I guess.
Well, that's Clefairy for that, I guess. In theory.
Yeah, you got lines.
Ogre Pond, Clefairy. Maybe it does. Yeah, this list is cooking. I like the Ogre's Mask. And wait, I have to check. Is this the first time?
But you can see it on the card right now. Oh no, we saw it before. I remember we had a prediction about it before Atlanta.
Okay, so we've seen it before?
Yeah, you can just click on the card too, it'll show you.
Can I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so 3 decks we've seen. Okay. All right.
It's on Atlanta. All Richard right, cool. Sepulveda. We didn't forget about you, Richard. We talked about you way back when.
All right, cool. You know what deck is new? Where's Jared Fish?
Oh, 330. You gotta go do a control F. We're gonna be scrolling too long. Love
Jared,
you, Jared.
Jared, why are you so far down, bro? Where is he?
340th. We see the festival lead making Diplin. It day 2 NAIC with the Diplin brand new Hydrapple from Destin Rivals. So very cool to see. The Hydra Breath attack, discard 6 grass energy from hand and knock out your opponent's active. It gave like Festival Lead this like way to deal with like the bulky, you know, the big basics in a sense. I think this doesn't beat Dragapult, but Festival Lead can probably never beat Dragapult. Did play the Rapska to help it with that a little bit, but seems a little bit tough.
What are these match results, bro? It beat one Dragapult Zard.
That's 1-1-1. It's at 1-1-1. It's fine.
Did he beat a Garchomp? Like, it's a weak to grass.
It hits the weak. Weakness.
Like, Garchomp's probably one of your better matchups.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Any list stand out to you, Parker, in day 2 that we haven't talked about? Yo, Typhlosion. Oh, where's that Typhlosion guy that was doing really well?
You can't type Typhlosion.
Yeah. There was someone that was on stream that was doing pretty well, like, towards the top tables with Typhlosion. Let's see if we can find him. Yeah, Christian, here we go. 256th place. Fell off a little bit late, but I mean,
started 6-0, though.
Started 6-0, yeah. I mean,
I lost to
hit Ryan Piper.
Ryan
and Liam.
Piper and Liam. Yeah,
ooh, what a rush. But did play the.
Yeah, Typhlosion Pidgeot.
Including some redeemable tickets, the Gravity Mountain, Defiance Band.
Yeah.
But Defiance Band plus Gravity Mountain does let you one shot pretty much any stage 2 in the game right now, which is a pretty cool combo. Actually, and plus the Victini to do even more damage. So plenty of ways to deal plenty of damage. Hey, very, very cool to see.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. He knew it well, too. He does put the call for Family Pidgey for extra consistency. don't see that often, but that was a cool list. I like seeing Wait. That.
Bro, Ian's deck made day two.
Ian?
Ian Jolly. The Iron Thorns. Oh, yeah. Iron Thorns. Crustle.
Yeah, Crustle Iron Thorns
what,
made it.
What?
We got a lot of one ofs down here that actually did make it.
We could spend a whole episode going through that. Yeah, maybe true. Maybe as another Crispin's Corner later
and
on.
Maybe we'll look a little bit later at that. I do want to take a look at the metagame before we end off. So, first off, it looks like Raging Bolt was the most popular deck, but when you take a look at it, you turn off the variant grouping and you put all the Dragapults together. We did have Dragapult at 16.19%, Raging Bolt at 16.09%, Marnie's at 12.43%, followed up by Gardevoir, Joltik, and Goldengo. For those of you keeping track of our predictions last week on this podcast, we got five of those six right, and we got five in order, the first five decks correctly in order. I think that's probably the best we've ever done on a tier list, right?
It's only up from here, so keep watching the Beach Corp pot.
The next tier list you'll see will be 6 out of 6. But yeah, I mean, pretty cool seeing the meta here. We never got to see like the more chart on stream this weekend, so just outside of the top six, the best of the rest was Flareon, Cynthia's Garchomp at 7th, Ethan's Typhlosion at 8th, Rocket's Mewtwo 9th, Charizard and Roaring Moon. We had some Roaring Moons.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, this breakdown doesn't really seem like too much of a surprise, right? So Flareon was the 7th most played deck at 6%. The next deck after that was Cynthia's Garchomp at 2%.
2%, yeah.
So, I mean, I think just, like, here, all these decks are just like, hey, here's all the decks that, like, are some people's fan favorites or some of the new archetypes that people wanted to try. Ultimately, not decks that are, like, that strong or, like, powerful in the meta necessarily, but are some fan favorites. So I think, you know, we almost see a pretty centralized meta game almost around like these top 7 decks.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty centralized meta, and we'll see you know, what it changes with our next black white and bolt flare, red white blue flare, two sets,
black bolt
white flare.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I got two sets coming out. It's interesting, it's weird. I don't know how I feel about it yet, but let's move on to our next topic, which is our we want to talk about the top 125 just a little bit for those of you that are here to look at it. So this is my projected top 125 standings for North America. The 125 players on the right exclude all the auto invite players that are in the top 125 currently as far as points. I think that number that's in the top, if we're correct, I'll have to validate those. I think it's like 15 that are in, like Jesse's not there, Evan's not there, I think Christian, I know Landon isn't, so that's 3 for sure. I'm not sure about Christian, so there's at least 3 or 4 people on this auto invite list that are not like in the top 125 on the Pokemon leaderboard currently. So I expect the invites to go down to 1, 2, 3, 4, like 15 spots, and by my calculations, if everything is right, which I definitely could have made mistakes, it looks like the CP number is going to be 700, which we've been saying on this podcast for a very long time, that 700 seems like the number you got to get to or better. And we've got, you know, if that is the number and my calculations are correct, we've got 8 people at 700 points.
Hey, and they understood the assignment. They said get to 700 and they got to 700. And honestly, can't blame them for it. And excited to see Anaheim.
However, there is no clarity on if they're all going to make it or not yet. So
yeah,
we hope that everyone does. There was a stream, you know, graphic that showed like that maybe ties get in, but it wasn't super clear. And then there was another website from Pokemon that it is clear that says play points to the tiebreaker. So it's kind of like we don't know what's going to happen with this yet. You know, it's just going to be interesting to follow along this weekend. By the time this episode comes out on Thursday, it might already be out. But it's going to be very interesting to follow along.
Yeah.
So some notable things to follow. I'm actually going to go ahead.
And I was just going to give a quick shout out to some of the players who like played out of their mind to like get into this position, right? I mean, we were talking about our top 8 earlier, right? So I mean, of the top 8 players that we saw, 4 of them did not have their invite locked until NAIC, right? So Riley And Greg, first of all, locking up the auto invite to not have an invite before. And again, said, hey, it's the last event of the season. He performed well and did just that. Same with Bray Chen and Raj Patel, also outs, did not have their invite, played out of their mind, had an incredible performance, and secured their world's invite with this. So I think
Yeah.
seeing that case and saying, you know, there are plenty of players, and also, I mean, there's so many that, you know, are on Twitter or, you know, can't shout out all of them, but like some people who said, hey, you know, played well, got the top 32, the top 64, whatever they
Sawyer.
needed. Yeah, I mean, so many players that, you know, should have said, hey, I need to do well at this last event, and then locked in and did that. So I think like I view that as a good like shred of like a good bout of confidence for a lot of people of saying, hey, if I need to have a big finish and you say, hey, I'm gonna really grind and commit on this last event, then like then you can have that big showing. Because so many players were able to successfully pull that off.
Yeah.
You know, even Lee Boy, right, who had been grinding a lot, right? You could see him playing in online tournaments all the time, doing well. Didn't end up, you know, getting top eight or anything, but he got in top 64, won $2,000 and punched the world's ticket. So,
Yeah.
you know, when it comes down to things like that, then it's saying, hey, you can spend time on grinding and perfecting your game, knowing your deck very, very well, show up to tournament and convert, and then, you know, achieve your goals. So
Do you want to shout out number 88 by my rankings? The Truth qualifying for yet another World
Scott,
Championships
Ross Cawthon back.
with 750 championship points. So again, all this is still unofficial as the time of recording. So we'll see what happens over the next couple of days. I'm excited to follow along. I hope that, my only goal here is that I was informative. I kind of gave some people, some data, and that, I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 to 95% accurate. Anything greater than that, I'm happy, right? Like, it was all manually done while I was streaming. So it was a little tough, but I had so much fun doing it. All right, next topic is Pokemon Ambassadors were announced. Mike, you want to lead us through this topic for a second?
Yeah, again, I mean, this has been something, you know, there's always that question of like, how do we as the player base and community connect with the powers that be at Pokemon to help make the game and help make you know, the, you know, Pokemon TCG Live the way we want it to be. So I know it was announced there are several players, and not just across TCG, across other games as well, that were selected, you know, members of the community for the Pokemon trading card game. Which again, it's just something that's like really cool to see. And we've seen a lot of those different moves of, you know, just, you know, seeing, I think over this past year, just like seeing play Pokemon a little bit more interacting with the people. We've seen Chris Brown, the director of competitive events at Play Pokemon, like tweeting
He's
more and
been
like sharing
interacting
more
a lot,
information.
yeah.
As well as now this Play Pokemon Ambassadors. So one of the Play Pokemon Ambassadors is none other than LDF, who's been a guest on the podcast many times. So excited to have him back on in the future once maybe we can hear a little bit more about the role from him. As well, PokeEmmy, a friend of the pod, and you know, they've been very impactful and helpful member of the community, and they also get to participate. So and plus many other folks in plenty of different games. So I think really cool to see that. I mean, Eric Parker, hey, if you're put yourself in the shoes, if you're Pokey ambassador for the day
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
got that first call of play Pokemon, right? What are you asking for?
Go ahead, Parker. You're first.
So like I'm more curious about the role just a little bit. Like the do they like, hey, this is what I think you guys should do with the circuit
Most
next
likely.
season kind of thing?
You
Okay.
know as much about it as me,
Yeah,
honestly.
no one knows
Okay.
anything.
I didn't
Yeah.
know if they had been like said more
Yeah,
about it.
no one knows anything. That we just know that they're in contact with Pokemon, and we're going to be giving them our feedback, and hopefully they can pass it along.
So my I guess my first in my chain of command would be to put more rounds in day two. I understand like they cut their rounds for ASIM, but like I don't know. Sometimes there's just like so many people with the same record and like I don't know. And I think that would help alleviate the I went X 2-1, but I have zero chance of winning the tournament. Possibly.
Maybe.
We'd have to see. But I would make it a threshold of championship points instead of this auto invite thing. So, you know, Eric doesn't have to sit at the computer grinding and typing
I
and
gave him
there's
was
something to do this
fun,
weekend. It's
honestly.
fine.
That's
fair.
yeah, I
It's
mean,
fair.
like, honestly, I don't mind. I don't mind it, but I'll let you keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's like
Those are some
the
good starting
having the
ones.
threshold
Yeah.
is pretty good, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Eric, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think my number one, and it's so far number one over everything, is the time rules have to be evaluated. I don't know what the solution is. I'm not a game designer and those type of things, but the number of matches on stream across every stream that results in a tie, you know, 16% tie rate. You know, there's just these, like, even finals and top fours, you know, going to 75 minutes. You know, I don't know if the solution is look at your prizes to save the prize checking time and shuffle them and put them back, you know, more strict, you know, per turn rule. It's just the ties and the situations that they're in, you know, just it's a little frustrating from time to time because it can just be a little boring. So that's my number one. And I'm going to add a second one just because it does matter. So if you think about the where we are in Pokemon today and how we've grown so much, right? Why have we grown so much, right? All the people that have been following it since 1995, you know, are now in their 30s or in their 25s, 30s, right? They have a job. They like playing Pokemon. They like traveling, right? How do we do that? We have to schedule time off of our work, our day job most of the time. We need schedules more in advance. We need notice. You know, we this weekend was a perfect example, right? Pokemon Go at the end, they announced like something new that came out afterwards. And then like TCG ended and there was nothing. There was like literally nothing. Like, at the very end, they had like the Worlds thing where they announced like, you know, the Worlds, you know,
competitor kit.
But they don't have to give us the full season. Just give us the first couple of regionals through the end of 2025. So I can go to my job and say, hey, I need this weekend off. I need this weekend off. And I need this weekend off. Right. I think that's very reasonable to ask because they know. I mean, it's June 16th. At this point, you know where your regionals are going to be in the next 6 months. So those are my two things.
That's
what about you?
I think for me, I mean, probably one of the biggest things I would want to see built out further, which we didn't quite get to see built out this year. So one thing I'll want to prioritize and hopefully we'll see this year pretty soon is building out like a full Ace Trainer rewards program for Sony players. I think, you know, we heard about this program and as it changed the format. Oh, then we finally got information about a 200-point threshold for a promo card, but I think we got that information like so late. Again, it's a cool thing to have, but I think it felt like a little bit of a bummer and like a little bit of a missed opportunity, which I can only hope was they ran into some logistical issues and just couldn't do it and are planning a full program rollout for next season. But I definitely want to see something like that. Especially like with the World Championships qualification the way that it is, having like clearer targets to shoot for. Some people go and say, you can go do well any tournament, just show up and try to get top 32 for cash. Like that doesn't feel feasible to everyone. And people don't have that much time to dedicate to that. But if you can go and say different thresholds of, hey, if you reach, you know, 400 points, you get X reward. If you get 500 points, you get X reward, right? Whatever those numbers are. If you're someone who says, hey, I can go, you know, do all my local tournaments and I get 150 championship points, but if there's something cool at 200, oh, maybe I can go to the extra cup. Maybe I can go to the extra regional, try to get some points. Maybe you're a player, you get to 400 points, but there's a really cool reward at 500 points. Maybe you're going to put even more effort, go do coaching, go spend more time, right? These different things to have little steps to like further incentivize players and have clear targets to shoot for besides like World Championship or bust.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I mean, I do see Seagrove's tweet about that, how he said, like, hey, like 400, 500 could be like you qualify for the last chance qualifier tournament.
Last chance qualifier, I think, is like a little bit of an issue, but that's just like the old system. But that's maybe for a whole separate discussion.
You could make it where, like, if we know the number is going to be around 700 or higher, you can make a target that, like, hey, if you meet this target, we'll give you a spectator pass to Worlds where you come play a last chance qualifier and you get nothing else. You don't get a competitor kit. You don't get anything. You just get a last chance qualifier chance to win your way into the tournament and you get to come to Worlds. I think it's fair. I guess something like that is like super fair.
Yeah. And something like that just kind of brings it back to like the old like day one, day two system type of thing where day one was basically a last chance qualifier, but for everyone.
For sure.
So for sure. I don't know if we need that. I mean, it kind of depends on the direction they're trying to go with it. Again, more chance for more people to have a chance at Worlds is fine. You know, there's different thoughts of saying, oh, you know, should it be incentivized to now that you reach this threshold to go do a last chance qualifier? Is that more resources? What day of the week is it? Do they have to have a convention center for more time? You know, we had a slew of logistical issues. But again, like more chances for more people to compete for something is always good.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Next up, we got our trivia segment. I definitely got to stump the boys this week with some fun questions. I know Maddox went to trivia this weekend, had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Xander and GameGrid.
Shout out Xander and GameGrid for hosting that. Yep. Anyways, but first up, FCBC. Got to talk about FCBC. Best sleeves on the market. We just ended our 30% off sale. If you didn't know, where were you? Because you could have got some awesome sleeves for 30% off. All you really did just kind of like come out and like, you know, in big support of us. So just want to thank everyone that, you know, that did go in and get your 30% off sleeves. So hopefully you enjoy your sleeves and let us know. And we got Nakama coming up, Nakama Con next weekend, the 28th. You can come out and play against Park the Elite Show. Four. Try to win a booster box. So good luck
and
to you.
And also just enjoy cards and trade and have a good time.
So shout out both of them. They're awesome sponsors. And but let's get into trivia. Worlds is right around the corner. Worlds is going to be where?
Anaheim. So here's a question about Anaheim Worlds 10 years ago, and I don't know anything about it.
Okay, so Anaheim is hosting Worlds this year.
Mm-hmm.
How many more times has Anaheim hosted Worlds, and in what years?
Okay, I mean, Parker, has it been more than one other time?
I don't know. I don't remember.
It's definitely been at least one other time.
It was like,
and I think like it was
2010 or 2011 or something.
Yeah, 2015 was Nashville, right? Because 2016 was San Francisco, which will be 10 years after the last San Francisco.
Nashville was 2018.
I mean, it was at least once before. Could have been twice the old World Championships format, but I think it's just in 2015, but I don't remember if it was Anaheim in 2015, but I feel like it's a 10-year for both again.
Oh, God.
Trying to think.
Parker's using 100% of his brain right now. Yeah, all right, was it one other time or two other times?
Let's just say one. Like I can't think of.
All right, once 10 years ago, like I said in the trivia spoiler.
All right, that's fair. You're incorrect. I'm sorry.
Wait, you mean it was about Anaheim Worlds from 10 years ago that we don't know anything about?
So Anaheim was last the location for the World Championships in 2017 in the Pokemon Sun and Moon format. Before that, Anaheim also hosted in 2006 the third World Championship ever, where, according to Wikipedia, there was no video game format. So I don't know a lot about that. Maybe there was just trading card game back then. So yeah. 2006, 2017, Anaheim, California, World Championships.
17, was it?
Let's see, Anaheim. Yeah, World Championship, yeah. Hmm. And they also had a regional in Anaheim that year, which was kind of cool.
They did, yeah.
Yeah. Diego Costa Rica with what deck other than Gardevoir GX?
Whoa.
Hey, we're back in Gardevoir land.
Some things never change, y'all.
Some things never change. Anyways, that was this week's question. Trivia, hopefully you guys are playing along at home. Let me know if you got it right down below in the comments. But next up, let's find out who was cooking down in New Orleans in Crispin's Corner. For those of you not familiar, Maddox will share a screen. He'll pick some random letter numbers to generate. We'll find a random deck that did not make day two, and we'll pair it against another deck that did not make day two, both at random. And then we will battle them out in theory and decide who would be victorious. And at the end, we'll crown a champion of who was cooking the most out of this week's Crispin Corner. Max, you want to take us away?
Yeah, we'll see who is our Crispin's Corner cook of the week. So we got a whole bunch of people in this tournament. So of the people who made day two, right? So we had, how many people even made day two? It was like 300 something?
390.
390.
390,
I know that number because
okay,
I was like
Gilman
doing some stuff.
Dang. So 390 to 38-12. So if you get picked out of this, you're truly blessed because there's a lot of people. We're going all the way down to 1179 versus 2543. So we're scrolling for this one. We go 1179. We have Anton from Australia versus 2543. Who was none other than... here we go. May Luna Ma with Yan. Hey, there we go. Now, this is the matchup we want to see.
Oh, my God.
So we have Yan Mega, the Dunsparce, versus Grimmsnarl Frostlass.
Yo, with the cross hole?
So we got plenty of options. So let's talk about Mei Lun's list here real quick. A 3-3 Yan Mega EX line accompanied by a 3-4 the Dunsparce line, 3 to Dunsparce and to Dunsparce EX, plus a 2-2 Crustle to use the new Mysterious Rock in to prevent all damage done by Pokemon EX. So very much a counterbox deck. And the ace pack of choice is Scoop Up Cyclone. I think the better, you know, setup. Lone, Attacker, Board States get liabilities off the field. Includes Tatsugiri, a couple Jet Energy to help get set up. For Arvin, 3 boss. I mean, support line versus we have Anton's Grimmsnarl Frostlass. And a pretty standard Grimmsnarl list at this point, a 3-3-2 Grimmsnarl line. Only one Rare Candy, the 2-2 Frostlass. 4 Monkey Dory and the 8 Energy. Accompanied by a team. By TM Devolution as a notable tech card. So, hey, listen, we know weakness is at play here. Yan Mega does hit Grimmsnarl for weakness, but Grimmsnarl does have some tricks up its sleeve. Parker, I think you feel personally connected to this matchup from your Swiss round, so I'm going to let you lead off with this one.
Well, I think Yan Mega takes it, but, like, the list on the right, I don't think has a chance against Yan Mega. It's like, like, my list, I had, like, 2 Badoos plus Maractus and stuff. Like, that's kind of what kept me in the game, but...
Just but they got two of the Ice Shard Snorunt. They've got to be cooking, bro.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Optimal, yeah, Snorunt.
I mean, the Crustle, even if you do manage to get Grimmsnarl out, that you can't hit it with the I don't know.
Yeah, it seems bad. Think,
Yan Mega takes this one, I think.
I just have 2 Dunsparces on the bench, man. Like, Iona's, I don't even care.
Yeah. Funnily enough, this was, I guess it's in like the middle of the pack. My opponent was the 3rd highest Yan Mega in the tournament at 4-4-1.
Parker, were you the 3rd highest Marty Scrimstar in the tournament?
Absolutely not. I was probably the 3rd lowest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Yan Mega's gonna win this matchup almost all the time. I do got to shout out some. I don't know list inclusions for Yan Mega. Parker, you probably do, so correct me if I'm wrong. But 2 Jet Energies kind of stands out with the Crustle in it. So really, this list is really trying to get into that Crustle, into the matchup that it needs to. It's got 2 Jet Energies, 2 Rescue Boards, 1 Cyclone, 1 Turo, no Latias. But you can tell they're definitely trying to, like, get to the Ascension in that matchup where it matters. Is a Crustle normal in Yan Mega, or is this cooking?
I kind of put it in 2 variants, 1 with Crustle, 1 with the Luminous Energies.
Okay.
And, like, other random attackers. Those are kind of like the 2
Iron Hands
I had. Yeah.
Right. That's the one I remember. Yeah, okay.
I didn't know we had that many Yan Mega variants to talk about.
I know. They should have
did his homework on Yan Mega coming
in.
Right?
I did, actually. I actually did. I was like, is this that good? And I played it a few times. I was like, no, it's not good.
Okay. All right, so Yan Mega takes this one.
So we'll give it to Mei Lun here. Just curious to check the matches. Let's see. Anton did not play against any Yan Mega. Mei Lun did play against a Grimmsnarl and lost. But we already decided our answer here. Hey, so that's just how the cookie crumbles. So next up, we have 32-42.
That might be me.
Versus 20-40. So
that'd be so funny if it was one of y'all.
32-42. That'd be funny. I don't think I'm this low, but I'm sure there's a great cook who is down here. 32-42. We have a Rockets Mewtwo, Rockets Fight Ops, versus 20-40. We have none other than... Oh, scrolling.
Got hit with the control F feature.
Adrian
Dragapult Zard.
Dragapult Zard.
Like, I know this.
So we have
name.
Adrian D'Souza versus
D'Souza
Emma
does sound
Alisa.
Familiar.
We're going to fact check this in the meantime. But in the meantime, again, we're comparing these lists. Adrian pulls up the Dragapult Charizard. Again, kind of a similar build to a lot of the Dragapult Charizards we've seen running around. A 4-4-2 Dragapult line accompanied by a 2-1-2 Charizard EX line. Include the Monkey Dory and the Luminous Energies. It also plays a Chuyu and Hawlucha, some extra tech cards. Unfair Stamp is the ace spec of choice, accompanying a Team Rocket's Watchtower and a Jamming Tower. And meanwhile, on the Rocket's Mewtwo side, pretty solid standard list. Does include a few extra ways to attack with the Rocket's Mewtwo. We have three Rockets Mewtwo plus two Energy Switch and the Lily's Clefairy inclusion to hit that relevant weakness on the Dragapult EX, including two copies of Team Rocket's Mimikyu and the one Articuno to help against protection. Max Belt is the Ace spec of choice, going along with a couple Team Rocket's Bacteria, Watchtower, and actually a Cold Versus Tenacity. Kind of a cool inclusion. Helps you find your Watchtower and your Team Rocket's energy. Honestly, I don't hate it. Gentlemen, how does this matchup go? Who do you think has it?
I'll kick this off. I mean, I like the Colorless Tenacity on the left side. On the Mewtwo side, it's a cool card to find, you know, the stadium and the energy card, consistent way to find it. Because, like, this deck really does struggle with draw power. That's, like, the biggest issue about the Rockets deck. With that being said, Dragapult Zard on the right does have four Iono. So we'll be disrupting Rockets Mewtwo every turn, pretty much, as they're, you know, trying to make it through this essentially counter box. Right? You know, Rockets Mewtwo's got the Spite Ops that hits for weakness on the Charizard. It's got the Clefairy that hits for weakness with the Team Rocket's Mimikyu. Does put a Bravery Charm to put onto the Team Rocket's Mimikyu, but the Dragapult Zard is playing Jamming Tower, one copy of Jamming Tower. So, I don't know. This matchup does feel pretty close, in my opinion. You give the advantage to the Mewtwo player just because, like, they're going to be a little bit more consistent early in the game. But because you're more consistent early in the game, you do attack early, you'll probably get Unfair Stamped pretty quick in this matchup, so it's a kind of a coin flip. I'm gonna give it to Dragapult Charizard, just saying that Iono and Unfair Stamp will be enough hand disruption to brick your opponent out of the game at some point. What about you, Burger?
I agree. This is like a pretty cool matchup, actually, just because like no attacker is safe ever. No. But I think like Dragapult Zard just takes it a little bit. Like, maybe a little more often in a set of, like, best of 11 or something. Yeah, it's just, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I think definitely, like this is a match that I'm kind of interested to play over the table, honestly.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, there's some neat, right? You said everything can deal with everything. So you have Spite Ops, then go one-shot a Charizard, but then Charizard can one-shot your Mewtwo, and your Dragon Ball can one-shot the Spite Ops. I think, again, Mewtwo probably gets out to the early lead here, but then, you know, a counter catcher, the Articuno plus Unfair Stamp KO seems pretty tough to recover from. If you're able to Ariana out of that, then maybe you're fine. I think a bigger issue I see here is, like, this particular list maybe has a little bit of a lack of consistency to get out the Clefairy, you know, since you can't search for it off of one of your Team Rocket's Proton. But again,
yeah,
like...
just two Ultra Balls,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Rocket Mewtwo list is, like, very teched out. Which is cool to see, gives a lot of options, but I think, you know, gives us some trouble just versus the consistency of, right, a Dragapult Charizard, which is, you know, this list might even be the one that Roman Stamina won with the day before. Like, I think it's just a pretty solid, like, consistent list.
Bro, is the one gear, like, normal on these Mewtwo decks in addition to the...
I've seen some people including gear just as extra way to find supporters. Because bro, and I think Poke Gear makes a little more sense because you play, like, the Chorus, like, you can't search it off of that.
Yeah.
And again, you just want like more live outs off of an Iono. So like Transceiver plus gear like seems fine. Honestly, like a Tatsugiri seems kind of cool in Rockets Mewtwo, but then it makes your whole deck worse. So ignore that I said that, everyone.
It just sucks that you can't put like a 1-1 Zoroark in Mewtwo. Like if you could just put a 1-1 Zoroark in here, it probably wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah, probably.
But like the fact that the Mewtwo is hacked doesn't work if you have that on your bench.
Well, and it just stops Ariana and stuff.
And
I mean,
yeah,
the Clefairy,
oh, it stops
Clefairy
everything?
Is almost like, well, I mean, it doesn't stop everything, but it's just like, if you have only Team Rocket's Pokemon in play, you draw eight, and then
okay.
Here you need four in play to use it, so like, you can't have too many non-Mewtwo's, that you can't have any too many non-Team Rocket things in play.
Well, so I guess so. you kind of could, since you play like Clefairy in time. Okay, I guess you could.
But,
I don't know, I'm giving it to the Dragon Ball Zard.
Me too.
Yeah, I think so as well.
And just curious, in the matchups, let's see, Adrian did not play against any Mewtwo's, and I'm not playing against any Dragapult Zard, so we just don't
Parker,
know.
Adrian pulled a U.
But
3-0. Oh, sorry, against Cyrus. Had to hit Bodhi Robinson. Some tough matchups
for
Adrian.
Wait, he beat two crazy opponents.
Yeah.
Kaden and Cyrus are, like, both very good.
Yeah.
All right, we'll roll with another one. We have number 1740 versus 3419.
Oh,
all right.
We're in Parker range.
Right. Yeah. No. I don't know about that. What would we roll if this person didn't show up unless their list is really funny? 3419. 3419, we have none other than Adam Long with Raging Bolt. Or Raging Bolt versus Marnie's Grim Snarl, and Christopher chose the list. So, again, you know, matchup of, you know, pretty familiar matchups. However, you know, we do have some extra spice in here for the crowd here. Adam's Raging Bolt list, couple standout inclusions. Actually, I'm thinking for no copies of Fan wrote them, instead just relying on the sheer power of setting up to get things rolling. Include a Shaman and an Iron Leaves for some extra tech attacking options. No Mew EX. But also does play one bug catching set, a few extra outs to find the grass and Tailmaster
and the
Elder
ancient
Bond.
Booster capsule
and the ancient booster capsule plus a bravery charm, giving you lots of flexibility in your attackers. Also, really really like respecting the ability to like recycle your resources with two copies of Super Rod and two energy retrievals in place
yeah,
of
I like
Ignite
that a lot,
stretchers
honestly.
And double pal pad,
two
double
pal
poke
pad.
So listen, Adam is never missing an Asana. He just put them all back every time. versus on the right, Chris, on the left, Christopher Cho. Grim Snarl list does include the Shaman, pretty relevant in this matchup. Along with a 3-2-3 Grim Snarl line, a 2-2 Frostlass, and the Iron Bundle standard inclusion, as well as the energy switch to power up one of their three Monkey Dories. All right, who do we got here?
Parker, you're first. You played Grim Snarl.
So, Parker, when you flip over, when you go to the table and your phone flips over Raging Bolt and you're playing Grim Snarl, how are you feeling?
I feel fine personally. It just turns into like a survive until you could take a multi-prize turn with Grim Snarl type matchup. But I mean, I'm comfortable with it. This list here, I think, is worse into it. Like I explained earlier, had two Badoo and a Maractus. So like Maractus, if they blow their Prime Catcher and their Iron Leaves early, you just like bring up a Latias and it's just stuck there. But I don't know. I think like in an average game where like both people are using their main attacker, Bolt takes it like every time. But in a game where you don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Maractus, with no Maractus, like, I see that point, right? Maractus probably just wins this matchup a lot. Because you just like, Maractus once, they KO it with, you know, Prime or Leaves. You go Maractus again. Like, KO it and you go, cool, here's Maractus again. And then, like, you probably just win with, like, enough Frostlasses at that point. Yeah, but without the Maractus, I do think that Grim Snarl looks a little unfavored here, in my opinion. The booster capsule could be very relevant in the charm if you save it for the right times. This list is pretty consistent. I'm a big fan of the energy retrievals in the list. You know, the decks that are like playing like almost no recovery and just three stretchers, or I'm like, I look at those lists and I'm like, holy moly, man, you got to be so careful. But I like the list on the right, and I think I'd be giving it to the Raging Bolt player here.
Yeah, I think in this particular one, right? I mean, Raging Bolt in this matchup really wants to target the Frostlass. And Christopher playing the Shaman does make it a little bit trickier to chase those down. Again, you know, not quite having the tools. Adam's list has some different types of consistency, doesn't have a lot of early game consistency, which I think poses a little bit of a risk. I think if Adam gets set up and is able to utilize the charms and find all the pieces they need when they need it, then things are going to be in good shape. You know, but if Adam has a slow start, then I think that'd just be the opening that Christopher needs to, get things rolling with Grim Snarl. So pretty close one here. But I think the squad has spoken and we've given it to a Raging Bolt here.
Yeah, we got time for one more. And I did get a DM for a fan requested match.
Sure.
So I've got number 2,385.
All right.
Oh. 2385.
Oh, this list
versus
cooks.
962.
Man, who could have possibly shown up to NAIC and gotten 962?
I know. God, that guy sucks.
Anyways.
Yeah, so randomly, this is a message by a fan.
Oh, wow, look at that.
It's Parker Greenwald versus Max Corcoran.
Our day one list. I guess people had day two lists lately, so this has been we haven't had to do this in a while. But
what do you guys think about this matchup here?
Well, first let's talk about the list. So on the right we have an incredibly handsome fella, Max Corcoran. I think he I think he's going to Worlds. So pretty cool guy. Opting Goldango Dragapult. They're playing a few weird cards. This is 3-3-1 Dragapult line. Plus the Turo jamming tower. Actually, no, and 2 Iona, which is a little bit standout. No Picnic Basket, which has been like the standout inclusion to help in the Grimmsnarl matchups. But then on the left we have Parker Greenwald. I think he's part of the Beachcore podcast. If anyone shout out Beachcore podcast, subscribe if you haven't already. Playing Grimmsnarl Frostlass, you know, really just saying I am him and I get set up consistently, so I don't need Secret Box. I'm playing Unfair Stamp instead for the Shaman, double Bidoo and Maractus. So Parker, what you think of these lists? What you think of this matchup?
I think the guy on the right has a basically the optimal 60 card perfection Pango list, and the guy on the left's list is terrible. However, I think this is a very good matchup for the guy on the left. Like I said earlier, you can just have them evolve all their guys and then Devo their entire field, basically.
Yeah, I mean, no Picnic Basket inclusion. You know, that's brave when you think, you know, when you're predicting that Snarl is going to be the third most popular deck in the room. That's pretty brave to not play it. So, you know, I think Snarl takes this matchup, you know, with Unfair Stamp, you know, hit him with a Maractus on a bench guy while Parker's setting up, and, you know, just hit him with some Frostlasses and build up some damage and just Devo into Oblivion. So, yeah, I'm giving it to Parker Greenwald here.
Yeah, I mean, okay, first of all, in defense of the Grimmsnarl matchup, right? So one, Maractus, waste of time. I play Switch and Turo. Like, plus everything can attack. What are you going to gust up? Another Goldango? I can attach another energy to it. I do play the Monkey Dory, being able to spread some damage back. I think Picnic Basket was something I thought about. And also, I've talked to Parker about this matchup, too. Like, since you're playing Double Bidoo, like, you can just literally just spam a single prize board the entire time. Yeah. Anyone who doesn't do that is, like, probably throwing. Yeah. Because you can just, like, spread enough damage with Monkeys and with Frostlass and Bidoo. As the Goldango player, your goal is to really set up a situation where you go, like, Cypher the energy you need plus a boss to just go and, like, chase the Frostlass. It's pretty tough to do that in reality. My thought was, you know, Picnic Basket is tough to use because they're playing it correctly. Then they just start Bidooing you again in the mid game, so you can never actually heal the damage when it's relevant.
Yeah.
You can't play the item. Yeah. So I found the more successful strategy to be, hey, listen, I just need to make a missed evolution. So I'm just going to set up some situations where they can take a few prizes. Sorry, almost like lean into them taking a few prizes and then hit them with one of my 2 Ionos plus Jamming Tower. Just Iono them to 2 or 3 Jamming Tower and just say, you ain't got Devo. And that's all I can really do there. So
yeah,
but definitely we'll give the edge to Parker here. And given our matchup results, I was donked by Grayson Lang for the Grimmsnarl, and Parker did beat a Raging Goldango. So we'll give Parker the slight edge just this one time.
All right. Well, that was our last one. That's all we had time for. But now we got to decide who was cooking the most. So top contenders for me are Emma with the Mewtwo and the Colossus Tenacity in the deck. And you know, some energy switches and Louis Kefleri. We got the Yanmega Meloon with Yanmega Dunsparce and Krustle. So for me, I think I'm gonna give it to the Yanmega Krustle just because Yanmega, you know, we're out here cooking with Yanmega. So I'm gonna give it to Meloon. What about you guys?
Oh yeah, Yanmega for me for sure. I mean, super cool list. I loves the Krustle inclusion. Again, just like has a lot of different tools. Yanmega is like a decent beat stick, and if that doesn't work, say I'm just gonna shove a wall in front and power it up in one turn and chain them back to back pretty consistently as well. Again, we love to see some innovation like that. So that's my pick.
I too have to give it to
Hey, it's consensus.
Yeah, I gotta give it to Yanmega. While it did destroy me and put a very sour taste in my mouth. It is definitely the most cooking amongst these lists.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, I think that's going to put a wrap on this week's episode. Let us know who you think was cooking the most down in the comments. And we'll be back next week with some more Pokemon coverage and action and podcasting. So till next time, we'll see you then.
See ya.